Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. So today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, I'm going to be speaking with Brandon Michael about astrological magic, medical talismans, and a lot of really interesting things. AC is in the woods this week, so it's just me and Brandon. You're going to really enjoy this episode if you're interested in astrology, astrological magic, talismans, any of this kind of stuff. We do a really deep dive into it. Also, this is the last week to get your early bird tickets for the Plant Cunning Conference. It's September 9th and 10th here at our small farm in central New York. And we have Matthew Wood, Kate Gilday, Lisa Fazio, Zamboni Funk, Eamon Bell, and a lot of other amazing herbalists, astrologers, and esotericists giving lectures, presentations, workshops, and plant walks. So if you want to get your early bird tickets, do that before July 28th. Okay, here's the episode. Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we're doing a solo host. AC's off in the woods, so I'm going to be interviewing Brandon Michael today. And Brandon, how are you?
I'm excellent. Glad to have you invite me. This is my first podcast or interview ever.
Cool. Well, I know of you from the Facebook group Stellar Sorceries, and that's an astrological magic forum on Facebook. And you've had some really amazing successes that you've posted about using astrological magic. So I really wanted to talk to you about your experience with it, about the kind of talismans that you're using, the kind of astrological magic you're using. And just, yeah, get into the subject and get really deep into the subject, because it's an amazing subject. So, Brandon, first, how did you come to the planet path?
When I got into Western astrology was when I realized that I was traveling down the wrong rabbit hole. I was into archaeoastronomy. I had reached a point in my own practice. Sefer Yetzirah has been the book I've worked primarily with as a spiritual system for my whole adult life, the better part of two decades. And there's astrological aspects in there, but there's no material in there to tell you what to do with it. It's just there. And I'm noticing everywhere, including in the Bible, there are astrological correspondences and information everywhere. You know, just as a simple example, you have the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 zodiac, Jesus, the 12 disciples. That one's right in your face. And the deeper you look, the more it becomes obvious. So I couldn't find answers to this. I didn't know that Project Hindsight or any of that even existed. All I could find was modern astrology. The best that I could find was like Max Heindel and some of those, but even that wasn't really what I was looking for. I dabbled in Goetia and Solomonic for a bit, and it got some results. It got some impressive results. And then I stumbled into a chance conversation with Cliff. People were telling me what I was trying to do was impossible. And Cliff said, hey, have you ever looked at Picatrix? Because if you haven't, it can do what everything else cannot do. So I recommend you take a look. And he said, if you want to know how to do it, go find Chris Warnock. And that's what I did. And then I jumped into it fanatically, especially after the first talisman I made. It was a very big success. And accomplished things, like Cliff said, that nothing else would do.
So could you tell me a little bit about your motivation for diving so deeply into this and like what your first talisman was about?
Well, my motivation was for my only child, my daughter. She was born with severe autism and ADHD that was so bad that doctors couldn't even identify it until I made the case myself. Like, it was so bad they couldn't even recognize it. Johns Hopkins, all these people had completely failed to make any difference. If anything, they made her worse, and nothing that I was doing was helping. So I'm like, something's missing. Go get out there and look. Stop being so secretive with this and keeping it to yourself. Go try to interact with people online, see what they know, because somebody must have something. And I finally stumbled into the Picatrix, and I started realizing that this is exactly what I've been looking for. This is the astrological piece of the practice I've been trying to find.
Stuff like Goetia can be a little dangerous too. I mean,
it's I compare it to playing fetch with dogs in the house or playing fetch with wild animals in the house. If you're very careful and things go great, hey, it's wonderful, but things can also go easily wrong, and you can't blame them because that's their nature. You know, you're the one, you brought that animal in the house, you got reckless. So unless you're prepared for the backlash, leave them alone. I still use it sparingly in emergencies if I can't do anything else. But generally, I just leave it alone.
Yeah, it seems like the celestial hierarchies are a little bit more set up to help humans in a certain way. Like, and they're a lot wiser. And
they can also be just as dangerous. If you make mistakes, with a talisman, glaring mistakes, they will hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that myself. I've experienced it. My first harsh lesson was I was making one from a sacred book of Hermes to Asclepius. There's a list of decans in there for healing individual body parts. And I got sloppy. I was in a hurry. This lady I knew asked me for help with her teeth. So I used the third face of Aries. And thank God I was in a rush. I was traveling. And so I just, like, hey, this election looks like it'll work, but I was very sloppy and it was just within the range of combustion. I made it, sent it to her, and within days, her gums were bleeding.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I told her, all right, just take a hammer to it, break it, get rid of it. She did. Her gums stopped bleeding, but it didn't help her at all. So then I realized, yeah, you can get bitten if you make the wrong mistake, especially with the ascendant.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing about astrological magic is that there's kind of a steep learning curve and it's very complex. How did you navigate that? And like, how long did it take you to become competent at this system?
It didn't take me very long. I've practiced mnemonics most of my life, which is using visualization to memorize large amounts of information. And in my day job, my paid job as an intelligence officer, it really comes in handy to memorize large amounts of information and keep it in your head. It really helped me make my career when I was younger.
Yeah. How did you get into that? Because that seems like not very widely known about those sort of mnemonic systems these days.
This all goes back to when I was a teenager. I was a hooligan, to put it lightly.
I see.
Anything but a spiritual person. I was a hooligan from hell, and I was in a car crash as a teenager. Me and my friend had both went out and got in a fight, beat a guy up really bad, and we had killed a bottle of Bacardi 151. You remember that stuff that was highly flammable? It was so strong.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, on the way, on the way back, he passed out at the wheel. Neither of us are wearing seat belts, and his foot was on the gas, and he just keeps accelerating forward nonstop, and I'll never forget it. I'm looking at this embankment ahead, and he's just asleep, his head on the steering wheel, and I said, all right, you're going to die now. This is a really lame way to go. Here goes nothing. And then we hit the embankment. There's a loud like explosion, a flash of light. And I find myself outside. Like, I thought I went through the windshield. I thought I was going through the windshield. That's what everybody would think would happen, but I didn't. My head shattered the windshield. And I'm suddenly outside the car. I'm looking at the ground. I'm looking at the dew on the grass. I can see the moonlight glowing on it. I can hear the insects walking around and the crickets chirping. It sounded like a symphony. I'd never seen anything like it. It's nothing like the physical world. I didn't realize what had happened. But I was just looking at the plants and everything. It couldn't have lasted for long, but it seemed like forever. And then some light started flashing and I wake up. So I remember while I was out of body and didn't realize it. And I turned and looked and saw the car. My friend started trying to turn it on. It made the lights flash. And I saw the windshield shattered and us inside. And then suddenly I'm back in it. And turns out my head had shattered the windshield. His face was all torn up. He smashed the steering wheel with his face. We got out and walked home. I had hit the top of my head and shattered a windshield with it and somehow did not go through. And some months later, I started having dreams, really weird, vivid dreams that started to freak me out. I remember the first time I really recognized it, I had a dream about these two cars crashing at a certain part of the road. I remember their colors and everything. It was a blue car and a gray pickup truck. I wake up, I'm thinking about that. I go to school and I see it happen right in front of my eyes just a few minutes later. And I was like, all right, what is this? Something's going on. And it just kept on going. I would have all these predictive dreams. I was a big fan of Unsolved Mysteries. Do you remember that show?
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Stack, I was a lifelong fan of that. And I remember seeing Project Stargate mentioned on there, that joint military intelligence CIA program that had been declassified, and the CIA was embarrassed because of the leak and they just disowned it. Like, yeah, we had this funded and operating for 20 years, but did absolutely nothing, and we're throwing it all away. Well, I started digging into whatever I could find with that. I joined the Army. And I went to the libraries we had, finally had good internet access because I grew up out in the sticks. And I dug up all information about that program that I could get my hands on. And it had manuals, instruction manuals. I looked up some of the guys who had been in the program, who taught how to do it, practiced it fanatically. But the more I did it, the more these spiritual type visions were happening. And I was still kind of agnostic. I wasn't interested in the spiritual side of it. I was just trying to use it for practical purposes. And I was seeing specific things that I had no way of knowing. And I started asking around people on the internet who seemed like they might know something. And one guy was an Ashkenazi Jew. And he recognized it immediately as I sent him drawings of it as Paleo-Hebrew. And he still to this day will not identify himself as a Kabbalist. He refuses. He's paranoid about it because, you know, his family in Europe were in the Holocaust. He has reasons. He definitely has valid reasons. But anyway, he taught me some of what he knew, and I practiced it. He pointed me towards Arya Kaplan's books, Meditation in the Bible in particular. That's, if anybody's interested in practicing Merkava, he explicitly lays out the process in that book. It's supposed to be super secret, but Arya Kaplan wrote it, put it out for the world, and Sefer Yetzirah takes it even farther. So that became what I did for well over a decade, and it worked really well up until my kid came around, and then everything started failing me. And I had been looking for the astronomical, astrological piece that whole time. I'd been looking at ancient ruins, studying them fanatically, traveling to them, and nothing was really fitting. But then I found, hey, it was astrology itself all along. It was just the older form that nobody had been practicing.
Right, right. Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, and there is a lot of, like the Sefer Yetzirah, it connects to that ancient astrology. So the Merkaba type stuff that you were doing, the Kabbalah, would you consider that more like mysticism and more like initiation type things rather than practical? Or were there?
It's definitely mysticism, but there is such an overlap with astrological spirits, because most everything you're going to see is of an astrological nature. All these angels and these planes that you go into in dreams, they're astrological angels, but how to deal with them, that was what I was lacking. Because I was approaching Mars completely unwittingly when he was in detriment and retrograde in dreams. And then, you know, not all my experiences were pleasant. But I had no idea. I started applying rudimentary stuff. Like I learned the basics of astrology, and like I knew, okay, retrograde's bad. There's some things that you should avoid. So I would avoid those when I knew for sure that it was trouble, but it wasn't enough. So I just kept digging. I'd never given Kia Solomon an honest chance. And I gave Solomonic a try, and it was impressing me, but wasn't doing quite enough. And then I found out that Chris Warnock and some other people, a small group of people, had revived traditional astrology. I was completely oblivious to that until Cliff pointed it out.
Right. And so when you came to astrological magic, you already, in a way, had relationships developed with the celestial hierarchies and the celestial spirits.
Absolutely. I just didn't know how to utilize it.
Right. So I'm sure that made things a lot easier too.
It did. And one of my first talismans was Sun in Leo. One of my first big successes as against diseases, and it was able to cure flu symptoms, and which I'd never been able to do with the practice I had done before. I made another one with, there's a guy that lives in Nigeria. They may as well have no health care. They're in such terrible situation out there. He was begging for help because his sister had this infection on her back that was gigantic. It was out of control and was eventually going to be threatening her life. And so I used a talisman at a distance, and within a day it disappeared.
Wow. That's awesome.
Okay, I'm able to attack bacteria at a distance, which wasn't a capability before. And he's on our board too. He'll probably talk about it if you ask him. These things did a lot to help his sister. And so I just kept going harder and harder, depriving myself of sleep, staying up as late as I can, reading, studying. When I went to Afghanistan, you can see how dog-eared and beat up this thing is. I kept this in my car.
Nice.
When the missions were down, when there was nothing going on, I broke that out. I read it fanatically. That's what I did in all my downtime. I would be riding around in a Chinook reading the Picatrix.
Wow. I bet you're the only soldier doing that. Would you say, is that a common book?
It's fair to say that, yes, I am the only person that even knew what that was, and nobody even paid it any mind.
Right. Cool.
Because people are reading about, you know, the culture and history of the Middle East and Central Asia.
Yeah.
It's a normal thing. So if anybody asked, I was like, hey, I'm reading about the history of this region, and nobody got in my business.
True. Yeah. So how long have you been practicing now since you got started?
Astrological magic, about 6 years.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and you've done some pretty amazing things. It seems what really interested me especially about the kinds of things you're posting was a lot of them are like medical talismans, basically. And that's something that a lot of people don't really focus so much on or even know about. Usually people are looking for money or love. But healing is a really important topic, and these talismans can be very powerful. So what are some of the medical talismans you've made?
Let me open up book 2, chapter 12. It's that third list of faces or decans, that strange one that doesn't seem to fit. There's the first list of faces, and there's the second. It says that they're Hindu. And there's that third one that's all sun in the face, and it gives a list of body parts using the Zodiac Man. It's very odd because this layout of the Zodiac Man doesn't match anything I've seen elsewhere. Like you have Taurus ruling the liver when normally everywhere else Taurus rules the throat. That's just one example. They're extremely complicated, and to find a good election, they're very rare. So when I find them, I make as many as possible, but they do work. The first one I was really interested in was for my daughter. It was for the head. She had been a chronic insomniac since birth. The vast majority of nights, she woke up around 1, 2 in the morning, and this had went on for years. I made one with an election that was just barely suitable. It was enough, and it stopped the insomnia within a couple of weeks. So I just kept going further and further, and when someone I knew needed them, I would give it away or sell it or whatever. And they were working. I've got quite a bit of success with those.
So are those your main go-to medical talismans, or are there other sets from other books?
Those are, if I already have them for emergencies, then yeah, that's my go-to. Like I just sent you the video that Kenny said, hey, feel free to show anybody of his father-in-law. He had a severe stroke just 5 weeks ago, and I got two of those Aries head talismans from two different elections to the hospital. And within 3 hours of him getting them, he started moving his limbs and speaking. And 4 weeks later, he's taking steps down the hall. He just keeps improving. I mean, his situation was hopeless before that. But sometimes those are not quite enough either. You do have these people who are plagued by stuff their entire life. It's deep rooted, and you can affect it, but it's never enough. So I read Ibn Kura a lot, David Ibn Kura. And one thing that kept sticking out in my mind was something he wrote about how if you understand the principles behind these seven talismans, you can apply it to anything. And he mentioned in several places, as does the Picatrix, the natal ascendant degree. If you know that, you can do amazing things. And I noticed that from the get-go. So I had my daughter's birth time, always studying it. I compared it to Lilly's medical diagnostic criteria, the medieval Arab astrologers. Hers fit it to a T. And I found a suitable election for her about 5 years into the future. So I patiently waited. And along the way, I started doing it for other people just to test it out, see how it did. And it did amazing. Trudy talks about it on the board a lot. Like, it reversed her whole life the day I made it.
Amazing. So yeah. there's a lot of different directions I want to get into, but so with this technique, you're using the ascendant degree, and you have to have the correct ascendant degree. I've heard that a lot of people write down the birth certificate. It's up to 15 minutes late. It can be hard. Sometimes you have to rectify. But so what are you doing to the ascendant degree? Are you putting Jupiter on the ascendant, or trining it, or how are you using it, and how are you electing that or constructing that election?
Well, first, you've got to consider the fact that when you use that exact degree, your options are severely limited. So a lot of times you have to work with what you got available within a reasonable amount of time, because a lot of people are begging for help as soon as possible. When you're in pain, a day is an eternity. So the first thing I do is I look for the Lord of the Sixth. That's usually the big one. L1 and L6 doing some messed up things when they're afflicted. You just put those, a simple solution is put those in better condition. Make a talisman with that degree. And this book right here, this is an English translation that Chris Warnock publishes, Astrological Optics. It's an English translation of an older source called Astrolabium Planum. I believe Abu Mashar wrote it. It's 360 individual images for every single degree. Something else I found about this was that about 70% of the time, they will fit the person to an Eerie degree.
And so maybe that's even a way of rectifying.
Yes, I've done that before. I keep that 15-minute margin of error in mind, and somebody will tell me their birth time, and I will dial it back 1 degree and be like, you know, this image right here fits you perfectly. It fits your condition, the very problem you came to me for help with. Like one of them that stands out in my mind is someone I grew up with has multiple personality disorder. And that image was a person with two heads with multiple minds.
Wow, that's amazing. So that's definitely a must-have book for the astrological magician.
Absolutely. It's a miracle that this thing survived and that we have it now. We are very, very fortunate to be living in the time that we are. We have to do a lot of the legwork, but we have the resources finally. There's a few dedicated people out there, like, you know, Chris has done immense things for this. And then you've got, you know, Ben Dykes and those people from Project Hindsight putting out the medieval and the Hellenistic sources. So we got a lot of blanks to fill in, but the resources are there. But back to what you were asking originally, how exactly do I do it? Lord of the First and Lord of the Sixth are usually the biggest culprits. But there's also the Zodiac Man, which is another chart within the chart. I've also used that. You start with, you're at least familiar with it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Zodiac Man.
You start with the ascendant degree, and that's zero Aries. And then you divide up the chart. Second house, even if it's Capricorn or whatever, that becomes Taurus. That's the neck. And then Gemini, the shoulders and arms, and so on all throughout the chart. I go through that and then look in, you know, Lily and Abu Mashar, Masha'Allah. They give extensive lists of what each planet will do in those signs. And if it's under specific afflictions, what that will do. And almost always it's going to match.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of research. I'm far from an expert on this. Each and every one of these requires extensive research and time. But I'll identify those root problems. Those planets, it's usually one or two, and then I will put them in a better position in the chart without those afflictions. Keep the natal ascendant the same, and I'll use that image from the book I just showed you. If it's an image that's negative, you know, showing them with a disability or whatever, I'll change it up. I'll change it to something more positive, and I've come to use Aaron's blessing, the priestly benediction from the Book of Numbers, as the petition. I'll engrave that in Paleo Hebrew, and then a couple of petition words above that, put their name on it, you know, the ascendant sign, the ruler of the ascendant, and so on, as Ibn Qurra instructs. And I've had very good results with those. That's what I did with my daughter. That's what I've done with several other people. And it's accomplished things that nothing else could.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so you're changing the image.
Sometimes,
okay.
If it's something like one in particular was a person running themselves through with a sword.
Right, you don't want to.
This person will be their own destruction and own self-undoing. And this guy had, he had all kinds of personal problems, alcoholism among them. I'm like, man, this fits you to a T. So I changed the image to him holding the sword out, holding it up instead of running himself through it. Because I thought, hey, if you make this thing with it running himself through the gut, it may make his problem worse.
Yeah. It's very true.
You don't have to use those. I did some research on what they did in the Ottoman Empire with astrological magic. The nobility had a staff of astrologers. Each and every time their children were born, they kept careful time of the ascendant degree. And as soon as possible, they started making images of those kids under favorable charts. And you can't argue that the Ottoman Empire didn't thrive.
Yeah.
It was a global power for centuries. it was only World War One where they finally had their downfall, and there's still nothing. Turkey is still nothing to scoff at.
True. Yeah, I mean, the Ottomans, well, I mean, they took down the Roman Empire, what was remaining of the Roman Empire.
Yes, they did. I take it you read my article about Mehmet.
Yeah, could you share with our listeners a little bit about, yeah, how the Ottoman Empire used astrological magic to take down the Roman Empire?
Well, first of all, I mean, before I even talk about what he did, Mehmet, it looks like his birth was deliberately timed to where he was born under, his ascendant was Aries, and the sun was in the 18th degree of under the degree of exaltation, 18 Aries, or 19th degree, depending on if you want to start with zero or one. But that was his birth chart. I've looked throughout historical records, and that was his birthday. The sun was in that degree. So it looks like they timed his birth and induced labor for him to be born under that, to be born a conqueror. And anyway, you know, nobody had taken down Constantinople in over 1,000 years. The Huns tried and failed. The Mongols, I mean, these people who just flattened everything in their path, they got there to those walls that was designed by Theodosius to be indestructible. It did its job. The only time anybody ever breached those walls was during the Fourth Crusade, when Christians decided they decided they were going to go fight Egyptians. But along the way, somebody said, hey, forget that. Why don't we just go rob these other Christians? They're Eastern Christians, not good Western Catholics like us. So let's just go pillage them. And the leadership in Constantinople at the time was so piss poor that the people in the city let them in because they wanted rid of their own leadership. So they had the key people go and open up the gates and let the ships in just so they could be rid of their own leaders. That was the one and only time anybody had ever gotten in. And, you know, after that, things went back to normal. And then Mehmet shows up. They had been prepping for decades, maybe longer. They came with more artillery than anybody had ever seen in the world. They came with basilicas, which is still the second largest cannon ever made. To my knowledge, I think it was only surpassed by the Nazis in World War II. They made it more like a Moab, the mother of all bombs that we use today, just as an intimidation weapon. They show up with those things. It was the biggest cannon in the world. It could flatten anything in its path. He had thousands upon thousands of artillery pieces, and they timed it specifically around a lunar eclipse. And if you look at the eclipse, because this is all in historical records, the dates and times, he did his final human wave assault around that eclipse. And anybody else would have looked at this and said, this is a suicide mission. He risked everything. His whole kingdom would have been gone, but he succeeded. The timing was very odd. And not only that, but that particular lunar eclipse, if you look in Thabit ibn Qura, a talisman for destroying a city, it matches the criteria perfectly.
Wow. Yeah.
There's no solid proof that he did this, but it is a little strange. He did have a staff of astrologers. It's no secret that it is historical fact that they timed that astrologically. They used elections to pick the time to start the attack.
Right, and why wouldn't he have a copy, one of his astrologers have a copy of Thabit ibn Qura?
At least in Baghdad had it. They were the ones who paid for it to be written down. They hired Ibn Qura to come over from Haran, and they paid him handsomely to write that down, among other things. So yeah, how hard would it have been for him to, his astrologers, to have made those and then walked and threw around the walls of the city at night? Who's going to notice? Who's going to care? They're busy putting, you know, repairing the holes in their wall and dumping Greek fire on Ottoman soldiers. But anyway, he does that. And then if you look at the time that he launches this suicidal human wave assault and compare it to Al-Kindi's chapter on war and initiating battle, well, the outcome matches his descriptions perfectly. Every down to the last detail. So is that coincidence?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, people, I think a lot of people these days don't realize how important astrology is and like has been in the history of the world. Like,
I don't know what to do. I mean, at the time, you got to think, if you're an astrologer and you got a job for the king and you failed, you were dead. Because as I wrote in the article, Mehmet had one of his admirals flogged half to death, stripped of all of his money, rank, exiled for failure. They did not tolerate failure, especially at that level. So if you were an astrologer, your words carried immense weight. And if the king failed, you were the first to get your head chopped. If you were lucky, you were going to be banished. I mean, that was absolute best case scenario.
But seems like they did their job.
They did their job very well. And that goes all the way back to the Roman Empire. Tiberius is recorded as having part of his job interview. If they didn't get the question right, the astrologer was put to death.
Right. Yeah, that's a famous story. So I was reading another one of your articles that about the history of astrological magic, and there were some pretty fascinating pieces in there too. In this same area, we're talking about the Haran, where Thabit ibn Qurra was from, and that's kind of like the epicenter of astrological magic as far as we know. And like the books from Haran are some of the most important sources in the Picatrix. And they retained their polytheism and actual like planetary religion well through the Muslim period by saying that their prophet was, because they were people of the book, and their people and their prophet was Hermes Trismegistus. So that's pretty amazing. But what I didn't realize was that Göbekli Tepe, which is the most ancient archaeological site that we know of, that was in some way like, it's these giant stone temples basically that are aligned with the
100. It dwarfs Stonehenge in every way,
right? And it was built before people were supposed to be civilized, right? And it's aligned to certain stars. But it's only 20 miles from Haran.
Correct.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was built when mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and birds with 30-foot wingspans were all over the earth, back when people were supposed to be little more than apes living in caves. Well, these people did something at least 100 times more complex than Stonehenge. They quarried stones that weighed between 10 and 50 tons, moved them uphill, and this thing covers the entire mountainside. They've only excavated maybe 10% of it, and what they found has blown them away. The sculptures in this thing is done in high relief, which means they chipped away around the sculpture so it looks like it's coming out of the stone. It's the most difficult form of sculpting that you can do. Right now, the academic consensus is they just thought this up for no reason, and somehow some genius sculptors figured this out, and they put this up for no reason. They dragged it all uphill somehow, 50-ton stones, managed to organize, I don't know how many thousands of people that would have taken, and they just did it. And then all of a sudden, agriculture is invented all around it. They're finding remains of farms all around. Towns start springing up. Urfa is right there. Ur, which you may recall, Abraham in the book of Genesis came from there. They called it Ur of the Chaldees. And then he went to Haran, where if you read the book literally, you read the Hebrew literally, it says that he made spirits and took them with him to Canaan.
Wow.
If you read it in the original Hebrew, literally word for word, that's exactly what it says, that he and his nephew Lot made spirits in Haran, and they took them with them.
Yeah. And that's the foundation of all of the Abrahamic faiths, right?
Yeah. So what does that mean? Nobody really wants to answer that one.
Yeah. Not these days. But yeah, those are some amazing, amazing details that we just don't even, that are overlooked. And it seems like this system of astrological magic really does go back a long way to the beginning of before recorded history, obviously. But there also seems to be a connection with recording, right? Because language itself is connected with the stars, and time itself, how we reckon time with the clock 360 degrees in a circle. That's because of the sun and the moon.
Gave us math.
Right.
That's exactly what it did. It really gave us everything. It drove civilization forward, no matter how you try to look at it. It was the stars.
Yeah.
You saw in my article, writing itself looks like it came from the stars too. The letters, the shape of the letters were images of star clusters. And it caught on easily because everybody could see those same star clusters. Those, no matter where you're at in the world, the certain stars will be brighter than others, and it's going to come out a certain way that everyone's going to recognize in a generally similar way. So
yeah,
and some of them are downright freaky, like Major. In North America, among the natives, there's a lot of people who have that as the great bear. It does not look like a bear. Mm-hmm. A panther or a mountain lion or something with a long tail it has, and the Ursa Minor. There is no way that you're going to see a bear out of those, but they did. And so did people in the old world.
And it's so, and one of the things that, like, for instance, Gordon White has a book called Starships that I think comes along similar lines. And for me was very interesting too. And one of the things he talks about there is how that there's got to be a common history for that. I mean, you talk about Hamlet's Mill also. I think Hamlet's Mill gets a little... reads a little too into it, maybe, but it's still there's some pretty important points that are made, that if you have, for instance, if you have Ursa Major being seen as a bear all across the world, it's got to go back to a common ancestor.
Either that, or when people stared at those stars long enough, shamans looked at them long enough, they somehow managed to speak to people all over the globe in the same way, put something in their mind.
Yeah, they speak to the same spirit, right?
Yeah, and if you look at the Mesoamericans, they're a whole different thing. They had different calendars. They had a 365-day calendar, which was unrivaled in sophistication until NASA got computers. Chichen Itza, if you ever go there, that has 365 steps and it's oriented to the solstice and equinox, to where on the vernal solstice, the stairs will form a only on that day when the sun rises, the stairs will make a slithering snake body to connect to the snake head at the bottom. And their numbers, from what little records we have, were the same. Seven was a very important number to them. They were thinking along similar lines. There were noticeable differences, obviously.
Right.
But it is a bit strange that they made their pyramids oriented to the four directions so perfectly, the solstice and equinox. They had a planetary religion too, as well as chthonic. You know, they had a blood cult going on, but their biggest blood fest was at least when the conquistadors arrived, was the Aztecs having a big murder fest on certain days for the sun, sacrificing thousands of people. So
yeah, that's
it was gruesome, but it was an astrological religion.
Right. But a totally different frame of mind, worldview. But very interesting. And it does goes back to that point that, like, even if we don't see it in contemporary industrial Western society, all of everything that we have is actually founded on the stars.
Yep.
And tapping into them seems to be extremely powerful if you know how to do it right.
Yeah.
And so you're saying you get about 70%. 8 to 80% accuracy with potency with the talismans that you you do?
Yeah, about 70% overall. It really goes by a one-third rule. One-third is going to hit like something right out of a storybook. It's going to mm-hmm. be instantaneous.
Miraculous.
Like, instant. There's yeah, like no that. Questioning it. There's another one-third, another 33% that's going to be slower, but it's going to stick. And then there's another third that do just a little or nothing. And then there's that 1% that you're like, oh my God, what just happened? I cannot believe my own eyes.
Uh-huh. So what do you think the factors are in making a very successful talisman? Do you think that your level of consciousness is important? Do you think that the materials that you're using are important?
Yeah, materials are definitely important. I have been in situations such as Afghanistan when I was out there, when COVID started its spread and they locked the entire planet down. Our supply lines were cut off. I mean, we couldn't get aspirin.
Wow.
Scavenging for aspirin or anything I could find. And all I had was the materials I brought with me and what I was able to get from the locals before they just cut everybody off. I had lots of lapis lazuli because Afghanistan is full of it. You'll find the most beautiful lapis just laying around on the ground like it's nothing. The locals, I have a brick somewhere that I'm saving for a special occasion. I paid him $10. He was only wanting $5. But I was like, no, here's an extra $5, man. This is so beautiful. It's the size of a garden block. And it is the most perfect lapis you've ever seen. So I had a lot of lapis, a lot of brass, and there was no way I could get much else. And I wasn't going to stop just because I couldn't get more material. So I went along with the elections I had planned, and they worked. But when I got home and could access better materials, they do make a difference. I started studying lapidaries like Albertus Magnus. Mm-hmm. I got the Peterborough lapidary. And one of my successes was, I think I found it in both Albertus Magnus and the Peterborough lapidary. It said that bloodstone has properties for the eyes.
Mm.
It helps eyesight. So I improvised this election, that section of the solar decans that I was talking about. It vaguely mentions that the second face of Aries is for the eyes. It doesn't give any instructions or image or anything. So I said, okay, just make sure that the rest of the factors line up, put an image of a ram, and then with the petition words, heal eyesight. I used one of the Psalms for, and Yahweh opened their eyes as the petition. I engraved that on bloodstone, and this lady's husband is 90, he's 89 years old. I've gotten a lot of stuff to him. It's really helped him. He was a total skeptic. Now he's a big believer. He has poor eyesight, as you would expect a 90-year-old man to have. She gave it to him, and within a few weeks, he's walking around the house without his glasses. He can see perfectly fine.
Wow.
That's to read, you know, but he generally doesn't need them all that much.
So do you think that obviously the elections are very important. And in the same way that the ascendant talismans that you're doing are key into the natal chart of the person being helped, do you think that part of that percentage of what succeeds and what fails, do you think that has to do with how that talisman hits the person's natal chart, or is it something else?
I've suspected that. I really have suspected that because we all do planetary talismans. That's the most popular. And when they actually hit is anyone's guess. Like, you know, Cliff likes to talk about his second face of Aries. He had that thing around, he said, for years, and then he had this freakish thing happen where he got the inheritance from an aunt with no leg, with a prosthetic leg. The image is of a woman only showing one leg, but he had it for years. And then, boom, there it hits. I've had the same experiences with others. There is no doubt that it came from that talisman. But
yeah, I wonder if there's, like, the timing techniques. I mean, in the West, we now have zodiacal
is it a transit thing, or do you have to look a little deeper?
In Vedic astrology, there are a whole bunch of timing techniques and dashas. And so like different dashas will trigger different planets in your chart. Right. You know what I mean? So I wonder if, I mean, something like that is going on too, where like there's a different, and we don't know. I mean, I'd have to, I don't think Cliff is going to give me his natal chart anytime soon. So,
and I don't blame him after seeing, I've seen what it can do. He is not being dramatic.
Right.
Only give it to someone you really trust, because you can do some serious damage with that.
Yeah. But also you should be able to, at this point, you know how to protect yourself to a certain degree too, but, but yeah, that's why I don't give my chart out either.
I would rather avoid conflict though. Let's say you have talismans all throughout your house. It can still cause you headache that you would rather do.
Yeah. So speaking of that, like, what are some of your favorite, like, protective talismans? Like, what would you suggest people go to if they want to, protect themselves spiritually?
Saturn and Mars, you can't go wrong. Algol has mixed results. Some people say that thing draws fights to them.
Hmm.
And then other people report that it started unmasking people they thought they knew, as they started seeing them a different way. And then there's destroyed relationships, destroyed friendships.
Wow. But then other people have like pretty amazing stories.
I remember one lady was being terrorized and harassed by her next door neighbor. And I believe she bought a talisman, an algal talisman from Chris, and said that a month later, that woman had a head injury and was no longer a problem.
Eek.
Exactly. A month after it arrived in the mail, she said that she felt it tingling in her hands, and it did its trademark messing with electronics, you know, causing the lights to flicker. And they do that for me too. It's just how she announces her presence for some reason. And then that neighbor was no longer an issue.
Wow. Yeah. I wonder also like how much the placement of algal in the person's chart has to do with that too.
It's hard to say. That's another case of a natal chart that I worked. One guy's son had severe depression. And he gave me permission to talk about this. His son, he's about 20. He's a young guy. He was just all over the place with emotional problems, and he was begging for help, any kind of help. So I looked at when he was born, algal's right there on the ascendant. So I go digging into Abu Mashar, Masha'Allah, anything for a remedy, like what, and I couldn't find anything to remedy algal on the ascendant. So I used Venus. I got Venus far enough away from algal, but still have it around his ascendant to have a strong effect on him, a good strong moon aspect with reception. And the day he got the thing, it's like he said his personality just changed for the better, and he's still fine. It's like a total 180.
Wow, that's amazing.
That was just guesswork. I had to put faith in Venus and Taurus as having good effects on him, and it did.
Yeah. I mean, it's also relevant that algal is in Taurus, so that's...
It is now. That's the hard part. We're doing sidereal astrology with the fixed stars, and then tropical doesn't change.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the other things as I'm learning Vedic astrology it's going to be a while before I can figure out how to integrate those, but that is a nice thing. The difficult and nice thing about using fixed stars in tropical astrology is it kind of ties you to both astrologies, both systems. So when the effects are most pronounced, is it when the person acquires the talisman, or was when the talisman is made? And when you make the talisman, are you like making it specifically for them and like saying their name, for instance?
Oh, absolutely. Each time I make them, I do extensive meditation beforehand. I actually, if I can, start the night before, incubating dreams, trying to contact that spirit and letting it know, hey, I need your help. I need you to ensoul this. I will get my petition prepared in ancient Hebrew. And then when the time comes, for about 30 minutes beforehand, at least, I will meditate and I will do the incantations. And then at the precise time, I'll start engraving like crazy. I finally found a practical use for my speed art. And I was a Bob Ross kid. I was born in 1980 and I loved Bob Ross, and I taught myself how to paint and draw, and I never found any practical use for it until now. Now I can crank out 6-8 talismans a minute.
Wow. That's impressive.
Battery powered engraver, and that's just doing it casually. I could probably do a lot more if I had to.
So you do the battery powered engraver rather than like a regular diamond tip stylus or something like that?
Yeah, I got the battery tip, the battery powered diamond tipped engravers. So they work for me just like a pencil.
Awesome.
I don't do them at all. A Dremel, I don't recommend. That thing is giant. It's clumsy. It's going to make your stone or metal just fly across the room. But if you go to Michael's or Hobby Lobby, you can find diamond tip battery powered styluses. And you can order them on Amazon too. As long as you got just basic drawing skills, they work perfectly well.
Awesome. Yeah. And the meditating beforehand, trying to contact the spirit, that does seem like an important part of the process too. So it's like all of these things, like the meditation and getting your consciousness to the right wavelength, the right vibration, as well as having the right time and using the right materials.
It says so in Picatrix, in book 3 and 4. And in book 4, it says something like the soul of the magician is like a gardener and the farm is the cosmos. That I'm butchering it a little bit, but that's the gist of it. We're like a gardener and the cosmos is nature and the fruits and trees. And then in book 3, after it talks about the operation of perfect nature, it's talking about the soul of the magician. And you're part of the chain. You're part of the great chain of being. You're the link, the focal point between the world of forms and the intermediaries of the visible stars and skies, and then the material world here on Earth. You are a critical part of that chain. And the talisman is the physical end result of all of that. I have been forced under certain circumstances to make them without all that extensive stuff, the Albertus Magnus way, no long incantations or burning incense. I've had to excuse myself from meetings before, and because I'm not going to miss this, and then go sneak off and make this thing and then get back to the meeting like I went to the restroom. All I could do was engrave, and they work too.
Okay. But
they don't pack quite as much of a punch as when you do all that other stuff. So if it's a perfect election, don't throw it away just because you can't do all this stuff. Take advantage of it. It will work. But if you've got the option to do the other stuff, the incense, the best materials, use them, but always make do with what you have. If all you've got is brass, use it. It will work. Maybe not as good as silver or a specific gemstone or whatever, but it will work if the election is solid.
Yeah, and speaking of perfect elections, those seem awfully hard to find sometimes.
That is a loaded term, definitely. We still can't even, everybody still can't agree on what a perfect election is, besides the theme of Mundi, which is impossible to even happen if you look closely.
Right, yeah, the planets actually can't be in that position.
Yeah, I describe it as pick your poison. Really, you're going to have your malefics, you're going to have your problems. Ficino had a way that he mentioned, because he was a physician to the Medici family.
Right.
He said a good way to suppress their effects is to put them in the cadent houses. We can, unless they're a significator, because he has a lot of medical uses for his talismans, and Mars and Saturn were among them. So if you want to suppress their effects, make them weak, unaspected, put them in cadent houses.
And
don't do something like put them on the descendant, that can cause problems, I found, especially if you've got a planet in the ascendant and it's directly opposing, it will cause problems.
Right. Well, yeah, you don't want...
Not the only one that found that out.
Yeah, you don't want Saturn opposing a planet that you're paying a talisman.
Definitely not Mars either, especially if Mars, if the sixth house is Scorpio or Aries. I found that out.
Yeah.
Still don't regret making those talismans because they were literal once in a lifetime. They were those prophetic heads that Agrippa talked about.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Everything lined up except Mars was right there on the descendant in Scorpio. And I said, hey, I'm only going to live once, whatever. I made them. I love them. I still love them right now. I sleep with one of the statue heads beside my bed. But less than a week after I made them, we all got COVID. We got the Omicron variant. It wasn't especially brutal, but still it was a reminder that, hey, it could have been worse. It's kind of weird timing.
Yeah. 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 But that does that. It that gives, you know, a little bit of hope too, because there are so few chances to have really good elections. And sometimes you just have to live with a little malefic action.
There's definitely risks a lot of times.
You gotta
find what you're willing to accept and what you know is not going to cause catastrophic damage and just go with it.
Yeah. Do you have any like favorite elections? Like ones you're like, wow, everything was perfect for this one?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Give me a second to think. I've had a lot of these where everything just worked out perfectly. I used one with my own natal degree and I got promoted when it shouldn't have even legally been possible. I posted about that. I'm like, hey, here's the proof. Here's the orders that come from the Office of the Secretary of Defense. I had got my career torpedoed last time I was at Fort Meade, Maryland. And I went to Afghanistan just as a last hurrah. I wanted to, you know, I like that kind of stuff. And my career was toast. It was done. Everybody knew it. It was no secret. And I made that talisman that Ibn Khura wrote for honors and wealth. And within a few days of making it, I got the idea to write a letter to the president of the promotion board telling him why I got torpedoed, of all the illegal stuff that I was forced to participate in and refused to go along with. And I kept my mouth shut to protect a lot of other people so they wouldn't get handcuffed and prosecuted. I made sure everybody else was safe before I wrote this, and you know, nobody could be in trouble. I sent it to them, and then they made a few calls to people they knew could verify it. They verified it. They sent it up to the Secretary of Defense's office, and I got promoted with 2 years of back pay.
Wow. And sometimes that's how magic works too, when the spiritual realms, you know, it's moving through the planes, you know, so you have the idea. The idea is inspired.
This is enough that, you know, I keep this very, very private. I never thought I would be on the internet one day talking about this. I am extremely, extremely secretive about my
life,
and, especially about this.
Yeah.
People in my unit started asking me, like, are you into voodoo or something? What the hell was that about? What just happened there?
No, not voodoo, something better.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm not into voodoo.
Wow.
Not totally wrong. You're just looking at the wrong region, wrong religion.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, do you have any advice for people getting into astrological magic? And also, can you point people to where to find out about more about you?
I've got a website I just started up. It's in its infant stages. It's called cosmicartifacts.com. I've got hundreds upon hundreds of talismans that need a good home. They're in boxes around my house, not doing anybody any good. So please, if you go to that website, be patient with me as I continue to inventory them, write up the descriptions, take photos. There will be a lot of them. They're very, very reasonably priced. And if they've been tested with other people before with successes, I will annotate that. Most of them have. The vast majority I put up there have been tested with other people successfully. Price range, unless the material was an outrageous price, they're very low. I also put up articles that I write for my own enjoyment about history, little tidbits of history I find that I think people in this community would like to know, shed more light on its origins. As far as people just starting out, go to Chris Warnock's website, sign up for his course. There's nothing else like it.
I'll second that.
Yeah, everything that I've just talked about here, using the natal degree, Ibn Kura, all that's covered in his course. It's in the later stages because it's among the most difficult, but he tells you, you know, do your own research, cite your sources, think outside the box. He's a very, very good teacher. I mean,
yeah,
I wouldn't have asked for anybody better. So do that course and follow the guy's advice. Keep reading. Don't just find someplace and stop and rest on your laurels. Keep reading. Keep looking. Own your failures. That's the other thing that people don't do, and it doesn't do them any good, is they won't take ownership of their failures. If you do something and it doesn't work, well, don't mince words. It failed. Find out why it failed. And yeah. That's the only way you're going to find a solution, is if you acknowledge that it failed and then look for another way. There's another way out there.
Yeah, that's how you learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I fail all the time. And I spend more time looking at my failures and studying them and learning more from those failures than I did just by hitting net over and over. When you do that, you get an ego and you start thinking that, hey, I'm great at this. You'll never progress. And you'll also get sloppy. You'll get complacent and you might make a mistake.
Yeah, and then it's a big failure and you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, then you've got a big mess to clean up.
Yeah. Well, that's all really great advice. And this has been an amazing conversation, Brandon. I'm really grateful that you were on the show and shared all this.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, cheers.